Los Angeles has a metropolitan transportation system, the LA Metro for short, but few people want to ride it because it's dirty and unsafe and it doesn't go where they want to go. And taxpayer advocates balk at the billions of tax dollars spent on dubious expansions. Los Angeles is one of the greatest cities in the world. Does its metro system have to be this bad? Hi, everybody. I'm Graham Walker, coming to you from Independent Institute in Oakland, California. And we are going to talk about the LA Metro system on today's episode of Independent Conversations. I'm joined by my colleague, Christian Fors, research fellow at Independent and director of our California Golden Fleece Awards research program. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you. But most importantly today, we also welcome Mr. Baruch Feigenbaum of Reason Foundation, who is the author of our recently issued California Golden Fleece Report on the LA Metro. Baruch has a master's in transportation planning. He's been involved in multiple transportation planning bodies and has appeared on NBC Nightly News and CNBC. He's published on the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and numerous other publications. Welcome, Baruch.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here, and that was a wonderful introduction.
We're very happy to have you on the team today. And also, thank you for authoring our latest California Golden Fleece Award, which, of course, is our ironic award that satirically honors California agencies and policies that fleece taxpayers or undermine the public trust. You chose the LA Metro as your quote-unquote honoree. And we want to find out why and what you've learned about LA's metro system. That's our goal for today. So first of all, before I read your report, I didn't really know much about the LA metro system. I was pretty ignorant about it, but I was interested to learn everything I learned. It's a report much worth reading. I didn't realize how geographically extensive the LA metro is. I mean, you can go from Santa Monica in the west to Pomona, I think, in the east, if I'm not mistaken. And you can go from far up in the valley in Chatsworth all the way down to Long Beach if you do it right. And so on paper, it doesn't look too bad. But you tell a story in this report. Part of the story is the history that lies behind the current LA metro system. So I want to begin, if you don't mind, with a little bit of the history, which was very instructive. You said at one point in your report that, for example, that starting in the 1870s, LA began developing all sorts of shared public transportation systems. But then by the 1950s, they began to replace the network of privately owned and operated transit systems with public ones. So tell us what happened between 1870 and the 1950s, and then why did it change?
Yeah, so LA, not unlike other metro areas, developed initially around streetcars, at least in the urban core. But then what happened is when these great things called automobiles were invented, and we had some of the improvements that Henry Ford and others made to make them cheaper, people started buying them. And particularly after World War II, they started being bought in mass numbers. And also LA grew significantly. And LA was never had the urban core of a New York City or a Chicago. And so as that happened, the transit use declined because it just didn't serve people. People lived further away. They lived out in the suburbs, and getting into the city was a problem. In some cases, they lived in the suburbs and they worked in the suburbs, and there was no transit agency serving them. And so people bought cars because in some cases they wanted to, in other cases because it was just the better option. And transit use declined significantly.
The early systems were developed by private companies, private groups. Is that right? You mentioned the streetcars. Is a streetcar the one that goes on little tracks that are metal tracks embedded in the road? Is that what a streetcar is?
That's right. I should probably clarify that. The streetcar is those little, some people think they're cute. I won't characterize them that way, but they travel actually in the street on tracks.
Yeah.
And they have to go on those tracks because otherwise they can't get anywhere. They don't have
right.
a system.
It's like the San Francisco Munis. I think they run on tracks.
Exactly. That's great. And so, yes, originally these streetcars were developed by private developers, folks who were building residential and commercial developments as a way for folks to get from their developments to somewhere else. And they were really land development schemes, for lack of a better
yeah.
word. But after World War II, they ceased making sense as a private endeavor, and that's when the public sector started stepping in.
The private developers, nobody had to tell them in the early 1900s or whatever. That, the government didn't tell them, thou shalt develop transportation systems. They saw a profit that they could make, right?
That's right. And it's interesting to note that at that point in time, when development was closer together, they saw these streetcars as the way to make that profit, as the way to develop. But then after World War II, when development patterns change, then they were much more supportive of the roadway system and the automobile because they saw that that was what people wanted. And that's where the profits
were. It was what they wanted. I mean, Californians are notorious for loving their cars, right? And that really took off after World War II. But the planning agencies, they wanted something better, or at least they thought it would be better. So tell us in brief, like how this agency, which we now call LA Metro, developed.
Yeah, so you had a couple of different agencies, one which was focused on heavy rail and one which was focused on light rail. And basically, it for a period of time, they were actually competing against each other. And they were basically competing for power and also for geographic region. And so what happened was you had a lot of these lines being built. You had different sales taxes that were being proposed because without this revenue, there's no way that these lines could actually be constructed. And so eventually, once the powers that be, political powers that be, saw some more opportunities in combining them, there were some problems with cost overruns and whatever, these systems were combined. But basically, they were two company. They were two different government entities. They were competing to build lines in LA County.
Mm-hmm. So let's fast forward to the situation today. That was sort of the prologue. And then these extensive lines were developed. There was competition, but there were government mandates. The system, I think, is highly unionized, if I'm not mistaken, based on what I read in your report. Christian is a Los Angelino and has ridden on the LA Metro. Just by way of local color, Christian, when was your most recent ride on the LA Metro and what was it like?
So, interestingly enough, my most recent ride on the LA Metro was also my first ride on the LA Metro, because as Baruch will explain later in this podcast, something about the employment density of LA makes it very unusable. So, for example, if I was to walk to the nearest LA Metro station from my grandparents' home, it would probably be about 2 hours, if I remember correctly.
Walk to the station?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Or if I was to take a bus, I think it would have been like an hour and a half. So, when you have a public transit system in which you need a car to get to the station, it becomes very ineffective. So going beyond the distance for 1 second, when we actually took the metro itself, it was incredibly dirty. There was trash all over the floor.
Where were you going from and where were you going to?
So we were going from Pasadena to downtown, and from downtown we went to Hollywood.
Okay.
So the cars were just ridden with trash, very unsafe, sort of dark, dingy conditions in some places.
Yikes.
The stations themselves are rather clean, but it was mainly the cars. And something that I personally notice is because no one, and I say this as a longtime Los Angeles resident, because like no one actually uses the metro, the only people that tend to use it are people that are looking for shelter, especially when it only costs, I believe, $1.25 to ride the LA Metro for multiple hours. So you have a lot of homeless people who are just on the metro with us.
Oh, that changes the atmosphere a bit. I noticed in one point in your report, Baruch, that it looks like there's about 3 violent crimes a month, typically. And you focused on May of 2024, for which you had data, and you narrated 6 violent incidents. I mean, a train rider was shot, a security officer stabbed in early May. Then in mid-May, 2 people were stabbed after they were ordered off the bus. And then a rider was stabbed inside the South Vermont station May 16th. A homeless man was attacked with a wrench, May 16th, also a rider was shot in the head and killed by another rider. Yikes. And your point was that that month, May 2024, wasn't really that much of an outlier. Why is security so weak on these trains?
Yeah, so I saw that and I thought it was a crime report for the entire county. It was hard for me to believe that there was that much violent crime going on. And I think it's a combination of coming up with a police force was not a priority. I think, to its credit, Metro is changing that, but it's not where it needs to be. As Christian mentioned, these are often de facto places for the homeless, for criminals, basically because there's not many people riding it. And so there's no sort of social environment encouraging it. You know, there's also been some problems in California with prosecuting people. And so if this is a good place to commit crimes, then some of those people who are inclined to do that will do so. It's a combination of factors. But if you're someone who's concerned about your personal safety, which is most everybody that I know of.
Like, who isn't?
Yeah. You know, and it's especially, you know, we have folks who tend to be, who weigh less, older residents, females in general. This is a big deal. I mean, this is a disqualifying factor, regardless of anything else that LA, that Metro is doing. And it's just, I mean, these numbers were just out of control in my mind. I just don't know how to wrap myself around right. the number of violent crimes here that were committed.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't encourage my family members to get on that with, you know, by themselves, especially. Yikes. So you mentioned at one point that the high point of ridership came in the early 1980s, I think, for the LA Metro system overall, and that it has dropped and dropped since then. Can you talk about the degree to which ridership has dropped off, even as investments in the system have increased?
Yeah, so we've seen basically a 50% decline in ridership.
Since
the high point in the early 80s.
Yeah, how about that? Wow.
Which is incredible, because not only has the region grown somewhat, but the number of lines that Metro operates in terms of rail lines has grown significantly in terms of expansions in the heavy rail lines and new light rail lines. So when you see that kind of drop, it's really puzzling. But maybe it shouldn't be puzzling, because there's actually some pretty good reasons for it. The first reason is Metro has several times prioritized rail riders, what we call transit choice customers, folks who own a car, could get to work by another method, prioritize them over transit dependent riders.
So to induce them to get out of their car and get on the system.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Try that, which has not worked well. It's obviously not working well because we're talking about the ridership. But so the problem with that is that they've spent a lot of money building these rail lines for people who won't use them, and they've neglected the bus service. And so it turns out that even people who are transit dependent can find another way if they really have to. It could be changing jobs, which is not ideal from an economic perspective. It could be relying on friends or family, which, you know, might not be ideal for schedule reasons. And so the bus ridership has declined significantly, even when it didn't need to. Not quite at the level of the rail, but still a problem. And there was a lawsuit filed by the bus riders union. I'm not a big fan of unions, but this particular union was basically pointing out, you've got customers and you're not serving them. Mm-hmm. And you're not, you know, you're basically violating certain civil rights laws. And they took this to a judge and they won.
Yeah, that was very interesting that they won that. Mm-hmm.
And then LA Metro was required to increase its bus service and stop building so much light rail, which they did. And ridership went back up. And then as soon as the terms of that consent agreement ended, LA Metro went back to its old ways and ridership dropped again.
So in other words, when they lost the court battle in that one case, they had to switch gears and do something more profitable. But after they were no longer forced by the consent decree, they went back to doing stuff that was less profitable for the system.
Yes. It's huh. Unbelievable. Less profitable and also fewer riders.
Yeah.
But that's what they did.
And do you have any idea why they're so obsessed with the idea of implementing rail in LA?
I think some of it comes from political leaders. Some of it comes from the business community, where they feel like they want to be New York. And you can't, no U.S. city is realistically going to become New York, because it was built at a different time. It's got, you know, it's Manhattan's an island. It's got certain geographic restrictions that even L.A. with the ocean and the mountains doesn't have. But they feel like there's something about needing to be denser that makes them a top tier city. And without it, without this extensive rail network, and without the density that they hope the rail network will provide, the really large center core density that you get in Manhattan, they're not a world-class city.
So it's sort of like status envy.
Yeah, yeah. it's they had a system, you know, in LA we talked about was known for car culture, and they said, this is not what we want. We want to be New York, and this is the way to get there, they think. And so that's what they're doing.
So the incentives for the LA Metro leadership and whatnot are a little skewed because they're not primarily focused on customers, ridership, and customer satisfaction. There are other factors intruding, like these political pressures from business and other leaders wanting it to be more dense, like New York. There's unionization. There's the pressure, I think you pointed out, from politicians in California, who what they really want is events where they cut a ribbon and open a new station, which has a bigger impact, apparently, on people's thinking than the actual ridership. Have I got these incentives right? Their incentives just seemed kind of messed up.
Yes, yes. No, you're exactly right. It's not just limited to California, but it does seem worse in California, where ribbon cutting is a photo opportunity. And so that's, you know, whether the bus or the train gets there on time, not sexy, but that's what matters to riders. Whether it's clean, whether it's safe, but whether I can cut a ribbon and get a photo op and say I deliver this to these constituents, that's what's sexy. And most transit agencies, upper level folks, as well as most politicians, are levels removed from your average transit rider. They don't know what the average transit rider wants. They don't, in my opinion, particularly care because they're not necessarily there to run a good system. They're there because they are trying to further political goals. They're there because they have a good relationship with the union and they're, you know, something with a log that. Although sometimes they are at odds with the union, so that can be a complex problem. But yes, transit agency governance is really atrocious in this instance.
I think you said at one point that in terms of rail expansion, that 80% of the money for those kind of expansions comes from the federal government. Did I understand that correctly?
Right. The federal government, assuming you get approved for a capital investment grant, a New Starts grant, pays the 80% of the share of the project.
Wow. So in other words, that's not driven by consumer demand. It's driven by, well, whatever factors control governmental decisions, which is to say political factors.
Right, right. And it wouldn't probably surprise anybody listening to us that during the previous administration, there was a big push from Washington to get money to California projects.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Again, creating incentives for the system to focus its investments on things that the customer base is really not wanting that much.
That's correct. And we are actually working now to perhaps change that federal law to, if there is going to be federal funding provided, it be for operations instead of capital. Because in our view, you need to actually have the resources to operate the system and maintain the system before you build it. And so right now, the incentive is to just build a system and not operate it particularly well and not maintain it particularly well. And that's why things break down. And that's why you've come on those problems. So, yes, that federal government, I think it's backwards the way projects are incentivized right now. But local agencies like it because that means they don't have to come up with too much of the money to build a project.
Right. And again, that's what's the sexy PR event thing is extending the system, building a new rail line or opening a new station. That's where you get celebrated, you get pats on the back. But operating the thing effectively and efficiently and safely, it makes a difference, but it takes longer to build up the credit that you get from proper operations. You could get instant credit by opening a new station.
That's correct. That's correct. Operations is one of those things people only notice when it doesn't go well.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas a new project, a ribbon cutting is sexy every time.
Christian, what could induce you to get back on next time you're down in your family's place in Los Angeles?
Well, I do have to say it was nice to skip traffic. You know, as a long-term LA resident, it seemed a little surprising. But another issue I just wanted to discuss is, speaking of being on time, I remember when I was trying to take the subway cars, the difference between there was one car coming in 2 minutes and then another was coming in 28 minutes. So that means that if you don't catch the immediate one, you're going to be waiting almost half an hour. So even if I wanted to take the LA Metro system, the, I think it's called the headway, is not reliable, and the durations between the cars going and leaving and arriving is too long to have a predictable transit schedule.
Why do they call it headway, Baruch?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's headway is it's basically because it's the time between the various trains. So in a railroad dispense, that's kind of the head between the various their various trains. But that's a frequent problem, especially outside of peak periods, is that the time between trains can be very long. And so there's the tools that people have now. They can look on their phone and see when the next train is coming. But if you're trying to get somewhere on time, that's not particularly helpful if you have to wait 25 minutes for the next train. And that's often a problem, especially in those off-peak hours when there's just not the demand. It kind of goes back to, we built a really expensive technology and now we don't have the money to operate enough trains to serve people.
And I suppose the bad thing is that when you have such a very long headways, if one thing goes wrong in your plan, if there's one delay, it doesn't mean that there's just one single delay. It could be three legs of your journey have now been upended.
Right. Right. If you have to transfer from a train to a bus or whatever, and it throws off your schedule and they all have very long headways, it can be a miserable trip. I mean, it's not unusual to see a transit trip in LA take 2 hours when driving a car could take 30 minutes, even with some congestion. And that's typical. Typical transit in this country takes about twice as long as driving. And that's when the train or bus comes, okay, that's not even waiting for it. That's just the time on the vehicle. And so that's another reason why people are hesitant to take it, because even if you're on your phone or you're on your laptop or whatever, it's still not the same. It's still twice as long as if you were driving.
Mm-hmm. I lived for years in Washington, D.C. Area and in D.C. itself. So I used to ride their metro, the D.C. metro. I get the impression the D.C. metro is a little better run than the L.A. metro. It's not as extensive an area, of course, for sure. But the trains seem to come pretty frequently and they're reasonably clean. Is my perception right, or do you know?
Well, I hesitate.
Okay.
I guess it is. It's fair to say it's a little bit better run. D.C. has its own challenges in that it's governed by Virginia, Maryland, the district, and the federal government.
Right.
And so it's a kind of a mess from administrative perspective. I think one area where DC shines is the rail is all the same technology. It's all heavy rail. It's not heavy rail and light rail. And so that allows them to do some things with common car technology, makes the maintenance a little bit easier. I would also say DC has a bigger share of jobs in the central, the core area
more
in
concentrated.
Downtown,
mm-hmm.
Right, which makes it more feasible than LA, and so it makes these systems better. So yeah, DC is better, but it's still got some of the same challenges in terms of high costs, in terms of improper maintenance, in terms of focusing on rail over bus,
mm-hmm.
Just maybe a little less of a problem than LA
has. And maybe the same underlying causal factors, which is to say the incentives are focused around serving government interests of one kind or another and getting government tax money.
Right. And in D.C., of course, there's experts at ribbon cutting. So they put the L.A. ribbon cutting, to shame. I think the other thing worth mentioning here with a cost perspective is unions. Transit systems are heavily unionized because that's what the federal government is. And it doesn't particularly matter if you're in a heavy union state like California or a right-to-work state like Georgia. They're all unionized, worse in California, but a problem everywhere. The salaries can be exceedingly high, well into the triple digits or triple dollars for a train operator, which is not a rocket science type job. Overtime can be a challenge. Work rules can be an issue. Sometimes the various unions are at odds with each other. There was an instance talking about DC about 5 years ago where the dispatcher union was mad with the drivers, and so they weren't letting them use the bathroom. and just all kinds of really weird stuff. So increasing costs, adding complexity, work rules, you know, obviously you have to have people operating your system, but the federal rules guiding the unions make it very challenging to operate a good system.
And speaking of costs, doesn't the LA Metro have some of the highest average costs per ride in the nation?
Yeah, we were looking, and it is some of the highest costs. And I don't know exactly why. I mean, some of it comes back to the contracts that were negotiated. Some of it comes back to LA just being a higher cost region. But when you think of New York, you wouldn't think that LA would have costs higher than New York, and yet it does. And so some of that comes back to, I think, just bad negotiating on behalf of management in terms of coming up with the contracts and in terms of locking in a long-term contract at a competitive rate.
One of the great things about our California Golden Fleece program is that each Golden Fleece report, it complains and gripes about some misuse and bad policy and whatnot, bad incentives, as you have rightfully pointed out here. But every report, including yours, also includes a bunch of serious recommendations for improvement. And so if anybody, like, I don't want people to walk away from this just saying, oh, Baruch Feigenbaum thinks it's all a mess, when actually you have a bunch of constructive, you have 19 recommendations for improvement. So you're pretty constructive. I want to focus on just a couple of them and then anything you want to highlight too. But the ones that most caught my eye, well, first of all, the most basic toward the end of your list, increase the presence of Metro Transit Police to match other forces. Yeah, that sounds good. And ban dangerous and disruptive riders for life. I mean, duh. Right?
Yeah, I think some of this came out of the uncertainty in 2020, the protests, COVID, all of the rest of it, when we were, you know, trying to make sure that we were treating everyone equally. But the problem is, you know, if you're committing a crime, you need to be held accountable.
Right.
And if you've got these riders that are continually committing crimes, they should be banned. And I don't know of any group or agency who's opposed to that. It's just nuts.
Oh, really?
So some of it. Well, I don't know.
They should just do it.
Yeah. Well, they should just do it. It's relatively simple. Other agencies have done it. So, you know, I mean, go ahead.
So currently the LA Metro is tap in, tap out. If you want to ban disruptive riders for life, how would you go about doing that? Would you switch how people get onto the Metro? Would you have photos of the people that are banned? What would the strategy be?
Well, there's a couple of ways you could do it. You could link the tap in and tap out cards with some type of photo, and that way you would know who those people are and make sure. You would also, in most system, the number of folks who are really bad are like 10. And it's pretty easy just to circulate those pictures to the transit, to the operators, agencies, the old-fashioned way. I mean, so you could do it high-tech or you could do it low-tech, but it's really a very small fraction of the people committing the crimes. And most of the transit agencies that I'm familiar with know exactly who these people are, what they look like. They just, in some cases, have not been empowered to actually take action.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And then there was, and my reaction to that one was, duh, they should just do it. Another duh reaction I had was a recommendation 4, require LA Metro board members who have transportation expertise. What? Isn't that all? Why aren't they already requiring it?
So this is an area that I think people who, you know, let's say we were a nuclear power plant and we had a watchdog group. And you would say, well, don't the people on the watchdog group have to know about nuclear power? And you would be like, I certainly hope so. In the transit world, it doesn't work that way. The people who are appointed to these boards are generally political appointees. They're generally appointed because they are very good at getting funds. This goes back to how do I get more money, more money. They're not appointed for their expertise. Some of them might have expertise. Some of them probably do. But most of them generally don't. And so I think it would be a good start to say, they must know something about transit. I'm not saying they need to have 3 master's degrees. I'm just saying they need to understand the costs and benefits. They need to understand how an agency works. They need to understand why certain technologies make sense. That doesn't guarantee they're going to make better decisions, but I think it certainly will lead to better decisions in many cases.
It seems kind of commonsensical to me, but anyway, I'm glad. I mean, you had to point it out, so you pointed it out. But moving on these recommendations, I think the two most radical, which is to say getting to the root of things, the two most significant recommendations are the one where you say, forego federal funding for new LA Metro capital projects, and more importantly, eliminate government subsidies to the LA Metro. I mean, so people's reaction to that, Baruch, are going to be, what? This guy's crazy. I mean, you can't have any kind of transportation system without government subsidies and federal funding. Do you really think, Baruch, that there could be a serviceable, customer-serving transportation system in the LA Basin without government subsidies?
Well, I will just say, as a wind-up here, that about 10 years ago, I did a report looking at congestion in Los Angeles, and many people said that I was crazy bonkers, and the report was crazy bonkers, and some of those crazy bonkers ideas have been implemented. So, I do think it is possible. The federal funding, it's really not the greatest thing, even though it seems like it is, because it comes with all kinds of strings. And even in a state like California, where you're used to a lot of strings, the federal government has got all kinds of requirements. You know, you have environmental that are stronger, that are harder to get through than the CEQA process. The CEQA process of environmental review is awful, but you can get through it. NEPA, no predictability. You've got other types of checks that aren't there, and you've got all this paperwork you've got to fill out. California could probably come up, LA Metro, with the funding itself if it really wanted to, because LA County is a large place with a lot of taxpayer dollars, and they have a lot of money. And so they don't really need federal funding, and I don't know how much it helps them. So I think that that's helpful. I'm hopeful on that one. Now, when it comes to when it comes to focusing on operations instead of capital funding, that might be just a dream of mine. I do think.
Well, but is it a dream because it couldn't work, or is it a dream because there's too much political opposition to eliminating government subsidies?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the second one, and I think they could do more with buses and less with rail. So I would say that's very doable. I talk a lot about bus rapid transit, which you can do in an expensive way or you can do it a cheap way. I'd like them to do it a cheap way. I think it can have the benefits that they're looking for rail at 1/9 of the cost. Okay, so that's still new capital projects, but it's much cheaper capital projects.
Yeah, I can't quite do the arithmetic in my head, but I'm thinking 1/9, that's a lot of savings.
It is, and it's like that because you don't have to have a separate track in right-of-way, which is expensive. Buses, there are a lot more buses that are being built than rail, so you've got some economies of scale of building it. The technology you can share with the roadways in terms of in terms of maintenance. So if you've got to pave a roadway, you're paving it with cars. If you've got a track, the only one using that is the light rail or heavy rail is the rail vehicle. So it sounds pretty incredible in terms of the savings, but we've actually seen it. And LA has actually done, we call that BRT light. And LA has done something similar with Silver Line.
BRT, there's also Bus Rapid Transit.
Bus Rapid Transit.
Got it.
Bus Rapid Transit. And they actually did a BRT Heavy, which is in a dedicated right-of-way, because they had an old dedicated right-of-way for the Orange Line, which has been incredibly successful. And so what they said to that was, oh, it's been so successful, let's build a rail line, even though they could have actually improved it for a bus. But anyway. That being said, they could do more with buses. They could have much lower capital costs. I'm not saying we're going to get rid of capital costs altogether, but we certainly could reduce them.
If you took away the federal subsidy for capital costs, would that weaken the hold of union regulations?
I think it would at the federal level.
Yeah.
At California, it's hard
to
say.
It has its own things. Mm-hmm.
But at the federal, it would, because you don't have federal Davis-Bacon and other restrictions that you have to abide by.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it absolutely would, because you're freeing some things up. And some of those are restrictive or onerous in different ways than what California has. So it certainly would help.
If the federal subsidy for capital projects was taken away, and if more broadly government subsidies for the rail system and the transportation system were eliminated, then it would actually reinforce your number one recommendation, I think. Number one is become a customer-focused agency. Because if the money is coming from politicians and interest groups, then the system will pay attention to politicians and interest groups. But if the money to run it is coming from their own customers, they're going to have to pay attention to their customers. Have I got the logic right?
That is 100% correct. That is exactly what I'm thinking. And that is what we see in every type of business throughout the country, is that when you have to be accountable to your customers, you're actually serving your customers. Whereas when you're accountable to some other group, be it politicians or whoever.
Organized interest groups.
Or organized interest groups, labor, whoever. You're not focused on your customers, and your customers suffer, and you usually spend more money. So you've generally got the worst of both worlds. You've got worse service for your audience, your people you're serving, and you've got higher costs because you're trying to please this group over here.
And regarding the federal funding, if I understand correctly, one of the biggest issues is if you receive federal funding, you can never close a project, which theoretically means that if zero people were to take the LA Metro, you could not shut the thing down. It could be the most fundamental misallocation of resources on the planet, but so long as there's federal funding, you're not allowed to close it. Is that correct?
That is correct. And
good
there are
grief.
No exceptions. No exceptions have ever been made, to my understanding. That was put in there to make sure that people who took federal funding were serious about the operating and building projects. But you can see the problems that it creates in terms of the perverse incentives and the fact that you could be operating a ghost train with nobody on it.
Talk about unintended consequences. Wow. We're going to draw to a close here shortly. But Christian, are there any of these 19 recommendations that you would like to focus on, or anything else you'd like to focus on before we draw to a close?
I think one of the most impactful and important recommendations is if the LA Metro is going to exist, like we've talked about in this conversation, it really needs to focus on bus rather than rail. Los Angeles is not New York City and never will be. Even if you were to completely eliminate all the zoning restrictions tomorrow, it's very unlikely that it would develop in a way that resembles New York City. So if the money is going to be spent, it needs to be done so in a way that's respectful to taxpayers and actually benefits people who are transit dependent.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, that's great. I couldn't have said it better myself. I agree. And I will second something else, which is it can be a lot of, in a certain way, fun to bash an agency who's got some problems. But that was not my purpose during this report. I really want them to, you know, and everyone who's interested. I mean, you know, riders, obviously, political leaders, community groups, take these recommendations. Some are easy to implement. Some are not as easy to implement, but they're all doable. And focus on making a better system. Because for the 10 million people who live in LA County, some of them who really need transit, this is just not good enough right now. I mean, it's just as simple as that. This is just not good enough. The agency needs to do better.
You know, if even half of your recommendations got adopted, it would be a meaningful improvement in Los Angeles transportation system. Wouldn't that be something? I want to just emphasize, just kind of as we come to a close here, that, you know, Los Angeles really is one of the world's greatest cities. And it could have a really effective transportation system beyond the cars. It could have a system like the one you're describing if it just took some of these few simple steps to eliminate perverse incentives. I'm looking forward to seeing this happen, or at least part of it happen in the years ahead.
Yeah, and along those lines, when we look back at, say, 1980, LA was known as having one of the greatest bus systems for a metro area in the country.
Yeah.
And it could, in LA, people were like, LA, all I do is drive. No, there actually was a really good bus system. And that could happen again. It just takes leadership and political will. It's that simple.
I invite our friends who are joining us for this program to take a look at this Golden Fleece report, California Golden Fleece report, called the Los Angeles Metro Unacceptable Crime, High Costs and Unnecessary Expansions. We're showing you a picture of the cover image of the report right now. And also, you can get your own copy of it by going to our website, which is independent.org. And when you go there, at the top, there's a bar. Well, one of the bars says research on it. If you pull down research, you can find California Golden Fleece really easily at independent.org, research, and then California Golden Fleece Awards. And thank you to Baruch Feigenbaum of the Reason Foundation for your hard work on this. I think you're a public-spirited citizen, and Los Angelinos may someday look back and say, you know, he dropped a few good ideas on us. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I hope so. That would be great.
And Christian, thanks for helping us out today in our conversation. Much appreciated.
No problem. Thank you.
And again, I invite everybody to consider the ongoing issue of Independent Institute's California Golden Fleece Awards, and visit our website, independent.org, and join us next time on Independent Conversations. Take care, everybody.